This episode is brought to you by Dove. You use all the right skincare products for your face, but your body has been missing out. With new Dove Serum Body Wash, you can give your body the vitamin C glow it's been wanting, the hydration boost it's been craving, and the active skincare ingredients it deserves. It's time for your body care era. New Dove Serum Body Wash. Get Dove or get FOMO.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat-up old running shoes, Sierra says, save on top brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well, then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, Rose, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Welcome to the Olive Podcast Health and Wellness Series. I'm Janine, Olive's deputy editor and podcast host, and for the next few weeks, I'll be catching up with experts in the field to get some great insight, advice, and inspiration. From wellness trends to special diets and how to get your 30 plants a week, we'll be covering a diverse range of subjects. Listen out for new episodes each Friday. I'm delighted to welcome Laura Strange to the podcast. Laura is an award-winning gluten-free blogger and recipe developer who shares her ideas, recipes and meal plans on her website and Instagram, My Gluten-Free Guide. She's also just published her first book, Eat and Enjoy Gluten-Free, which we'll be featuring some lovely recipes from in our upcoming March issue of Olive. Welcome, Laura. Thanks for coming to see us today.
Thanks so much for having me. And oh, that's such a kind introduction as well.
It's all true, though. I thought, firstly, could you tell us a little bit about your journey to where you are now?
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. I was diagnosed with celiac disease when I was 14, so that's 25 years ago now, giving you my age straight away. And now I have a gluten-free cookbook, so it sort of blows my mind how I've got to this point. Celiacs, as you hopefully all know, have to eat a strict gluten-free diet.
Yeah.
No cheat days, sadly, no just having a bit of gluten here and there. So when I was first diagnosed, it really was a total leap into the unknown. I didn't even know what gluten was, never heard of it. And suddenly being told by the GP, you have to eat gluten-free now, I felt really lost. So I'd always been into cooking at home. I'm from a family of keen home cooks and professional bakers. So my mom and I gradually felt our way through gluten-free cooking and built up our skills. And my mom was subsequently diagnosed as well a few days later. You couldn't really get gluten-free products in the shops at that point.
Yeah.
And what you could get really wasn't good. Mm. Very dense, solid bread and things like that. So it was all about learning to make things at home that were delicious and that replicated the gluten-full products that I missed being able to have. And then it was probably about 10 years ago that I then started an Instagram account just as a bit of a hobby, really, a creative outlet. I had a very intense day job in a corporate law firm, and there was no intention behind the Instagram aside from just to share about the sort of knowledge that I'd accumulated over the years, have a nice little creative outlet. And surprisingly to me, it became quite popular, and there was a real void. I think there weren't any big sources of gluten-free recipes or information about being gluten-free out there. So I've just been sharing it ever since, and left my job to do this full-time about 7 years ago. And I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, it's just wonderful. I'm quite geeky. I really get into the science of creating gluten-free recipes to try and, as I said earlier, really replicate the dishes and the foods that I missed. But also, I just love being able to help give people confidence in their cooking and to support people's own growth in building those gluten-free cookery skills at home and encouraging them just to give it a go and rediscover delicious food that happens to be gluten-free.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I've been reading the book for the past couple of days and found it really inspiring. And the word I kept thinking was, it's really joyous. It's like, you know, there's a lot of like beautiful looking food in there that kind of makes you want to cook it. So I can see how, you know, your accounts are inspiring. Can we start by talking a little bit about like the nitty gritty, like what does gluten-free actually mean? What is gluten? Because it's not just wheat, is it?
No. So gluten is a protein, actually. Yeah. You find it inside certain grains. So wheat, barley and rye are the grains that have gluten in the centre. And celiacs and other people on a gluten-free diet also have to be wary of oats because while oats themselves contain a different protein called avenin, during manufacturing there's often cross-contamination.
Oh,
so
okay.
Celiacs can have safely processed gluten-free oats, but not any old oats from the supermarket. So wheat, barley, oats and rye are the ones that you're going to have to avoid if you're following a gluten-free diet.
And I mean, you've mentioned celiacs and that was your diagnosis, but there's loads of different reasons why people are eating gluten-free, isn't there?
Yes, totally. So I'm celiac, as I mentioned, and I should say as well, so if anyone's listening and they think they could be celiac, it's really important not to go gluten-free straight away.
Okay.
You need to ensure that you are eating gluten throughout the diagnosis process. So go and see your GP. They will do a blood test, and if that's positive, you then have an endoscopy, which basically takes a sample of your gut lining.
Yeah.
Because when celiacs eat gluten, your body... like because it's an autoimmune condition, your body then attacks itself. So it attacks the tissues in the small intestine and the gut lining. So it causes really visible damage that you can see very clearly on like a biopsy from an endoscopy. And getting that kind of a formal diagnosis
at that really point
is really important because there's so much after support that you can get through the NHS. And then you can go gluten-free and you have to be strictly gluten-free.
Yeah.
But so other conditions as well, that there's plenty. So IBS, there's IBD, endometriosis, PCOS, so many different medical conditions that
a gluten-free diet can then really benefit. Help you. Yeah.
And there's also lots of people who just feel better for eating gluten-free.
Yeah.
So I think whatever people's reason is for being gluten-free, everyone's an equal member of the gluten-free community and everyone deserves that support.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, you know, we celiacs get the sort of gold badge in restaurants. They're like, okay, you're celiac, we'll look after you properly. And they might take less care for someone who's gluten intolerant, which is such a shame because... you know, everyone's equal in that respect.
I feel like gluten-free has moved a lot more into the kind of mainstream in terms of the things that, you know, how serious people are taking it. Because on one hand, it can be really debilitating, can't it? Like disease.
Yes.
Like celiac, which is really serious. I mean, reading about it, I was just on the website reading about it. On the other hand, as you said, it can be something that you can take into your lifestyle and it can really improve existing conditions as well. Or it can just be a lifestyle choice. And there's no reason why, you know, people shouldn't be able to eat delicious food as well.
Yeah.
And I feel like even going around supermarkets, it seems like the offering is a bit better than it used to be, as you were saying about the big, stodgy, heavy bread in the past.
I'm very optimistic about it all, I think, because before I got diagnosed, I was so poorly. And honestly, looking back on that period of my life is quite hard because my life was very difficult because I can't look at photos. I was this little...
You said you were really like 6 stone
skeleton,
or something.
Yeah, 6 stone at the age of 14. And when you're a 14-year-old girl, a lot of people just assume you have an eating disorder, unfortunately, and brushed off symptoms as anxiety and the rest. But anyway, getting that diagnosis was just such a relief. I could get healthy. I could get strong.
Yeah.
I was able to gain weight, which was a delight for me. And having been celiac for a long time, I've seen the change from when there was no free from section in the supermarket to now when you've got this wonderful array of products. But it's still, although I'm very positive, it's still very hard as a condition to live with.
Yeah.
And there's still not that level of awareness that we need to have. Unfortunately, there's a lot of misconceptions around gluten-free people being fussy or gluten-free food being like cardboard and yucky. Yeah. And actually, a lot of the meals that people will be eating at home
are gluten free
anyway. Because there are so many naturally gluten free foods. It's just, it's all about. So I'm just with the book, I'm really trying to just dispel those preconceptions about gluten free food being yuck.
Yeah, I love that.
It's just food.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Bai. It's Wonderwater. What makes Bai so great? It's simple. From raspberry lemon lime by Sydney Sweeney to Zambia Bing cherry and Palavo pineapple mango, Bai has antioxidants, electrolytes, and no artificial sweeteners. So for flavorful hydration, choose Bai. It's Wonderwater. Learn more about Bai and discover all of the exotic, bold flavors at drinkbai.com.
Let's talk a little bit about labels, because you go into it in your book. You know, labels are useful because, thank God, manufacturers are now having to, you know, proclaim everything on a label. What sort of things should people be looking for if they are trying to avoid gluten?
Okay, so the four that I mentioned earlier, yeah. So avoid anything that contains wheat, barley, oats and rye, unless those oats are specifically stated as being gluten-free. You'll also want to watch out for may contain warnings on products, because unless you can question the manufacturer directly about how something is made, a product could be made on the same line as something containing gluten. So yeah. I, unfortunately, in my younger days when I was being more gung-ho, got really poorly once from eating a product with a may contain warning. And that was a good lesson for me.
Yeah.
And
so if it says may contain, just avoid it if it's going to really
trigger
you. Someone
said to me, how do you feel if something said may contain poison? And that's quite
a good way of
looking at
it.
I mean, it's
it,
a strong way of going for it.
But yeah.
Yeah. I would say when it comes to shopping for gluten-free products, just read the labels carefully.
Yeah.
Even if you've read that product's label before, processes and ingredients do change.
Yeah.
So always better safe than sorry.
I know. I mean, it's sad, but we do just have to be our own little police, don't we?
Yeah.
And like, kind of look
after
ourselves.
Well, you become an absolute pro in a minute. I can spot gluten at a mile away now. I'm like, okay, I can speed read.
Yeah.
But at first, it's a lot for people to have to take on, you know, having to trawl through all the labels.
Well, let's talk about some obvious gluten sources and some sneakier ones, because some of the sneakier ones I was really surprised about.
So the common sources of gluten are things like bread, biscuits, cakes, we've got pasta, flour, beer, lots of the good stuff, as people would term it. But there are also some sneakier sources of gluten that people might not be aware of. Soy sauce was one. It took me ages to realise when I was younger. And there's a fantastic substitute for that. You can use tamari instead, which is naturally gluten-free.
Yeah.
A really nice swap and a very simple one to make. And then you'll find gluten in small quantities in things like Smarties.
Why?
I know.
Oh, is it like some kind of flour? The coating, yeah.
But obviously, as a kid, Smarties are the hallowed treat, aren't they? And it lurks in coatings. So it's just all about checking things. So you might find it in crisps sometimes, in sausages as a bulking agent, in frozen oven chips sometimes. Those are coated in flour to help with the crispiness.
They are to the crispiness. So. I get, it's interesting because there's a big conversation going on at the minute about ultra-processed foods. Mm. And I guess a lot of them will have it because it'll be some kind of thickening or bulking agent.
Yeah, I really noticed actually at Christmas time that a lot of the party food items in the supermarket that happened to be gluten-free last year aren't this year.
Right.
I do wonder if with the increasing costs of things, manufacturers were adding back in those cheap ingredients like wheat flour to bulk things up and coat things. But
You've also got a really, I found a really useful page, which is all about, you know, if you are cooking for someone who's gluten-free and who really, you know, like celiac, about cross-contamination and how to avoid that. And it's kind of, common sense when you read it, but I never even thought about it. Can you tell us some of the things that you have to look out
for? I had a lovely conversation with a chef in a restaurant, actually, when I was asking if he could cater safely for me. It was a really small kitchen. And he was like, of course I can. He's like, I have good hygiene processes in my kitchen. And, you know, you can rest assured that I will not cross. And so I was really grateful for that. It's a good way to think about it, really. Yeah. So cross-contamination, unfortunately, is a big bugbear for those of us who are very sensitive to gluten. A small crumb of gluten in my food would make me poorly, which is a real pain. It'd be lovely if I could just be loosely gluten-free. But with cross-contamination, if you're catering for someone, just make sure that you are washing your hands, using clean chopping boards, clean utensils, wipe down your surfaces, because crumbs really get everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you've made yourself a cheese toastie while you're prepping something, just make sure you clear all that away, because those crumbs are just so sneaky. If you were cooking pasta for someone who's gluten-free and you've got two saucepans, one with gluten pasta, one with gluten-free, make sure you're not using the same spoon to stir them.
Wow.
So bits like that, just really being aware of what you're doing, which I appreciate is quite a lot for someone to think about, but just think of it as good hygiene and wash those hands. Like antibacterial hand gel won't kill gluten. Gluten, as we talked about, is a protein. It's not a bacteria. Heat won't kill it. So deep frying will, you know, you have to have fresh oil to deep fry gluten-free things. You can't go in the same fryer as gluten-containing products.
Yeah, I suppose the easiest thing you could do, which is one of your things, is just make a naturally gluten-free meal.
Yes.
Because as you were saying right at the beginning, a lot of the stuff I probably make all week is gluten-free and I don't even think about it, but it is.
There are so many gluten-free foods that are naturally gluten-free. So even the basics, you know, meat and fish and potatoes, rice, and then grains like quinoa, buckwheat, polenta, those are all gluten-free.
So all of those grains you can have.
Always check the packets for May contain warnings. the perils of manufacturing sometimes, but there's plenty for people to choose from. And in the book, I've included lots of meals that are either naturally gluten-free or imperceptibly gluten-free.
Right.
You might have a little tweak, so using tamari instead of soy sauce, using corn flour to thicken a sauce rather than plain flour.
Yeah.
Those tiny swaps that you can make to a meal that then make it accessible to everyone and the whole household can then eat it.
Yeah.
Because no one's got the time, money, effort to have to cook 2-3 different meals every evening.
Yeah.
So if you can make one meal for everyone in your household, like, such a win.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned the tamari, corn flour, which we've all got in also, well, I've got them in my store cupboards, but, you know, but which are readily available and you would recognise them on the shelf. But you've also got a nice little chapter called Magic Ingredients, which has got some really interesting ingredients. I mean, not they're not weird. They're not like sort of, you know, out of a science lab, but they're just your little helpers in the kitchen, aren't they?
Yeah.
Can we talk about some of those?
Totally. I'd love to. And I think before you get into gluten-free cooking and baking, you might be, you've never heard of some of these things.
Mm.
And I'd also like to say, I never use ingredients in cooking unless they play a significant role.
Right.
I think one of my mantras is really like paring down recipes to make them easy and simple to follow. And that might mean removing steps that are going to improve it by 2%. But, you know, really, we just want recipes that people can make every day. So if I include a magic ingredient in a recipe, it plays a role.
Yeah.
So don't skip it. So one that I really love that I've discovered in the last few years is psyllium husk.
Yeah.
Now, this is a naturally derived plant husk. And when you combine it with water, it sort of turns into like a stretchy gel.
Oh,
so I don't know if you've ever seen gluten in its pure form. It's like really tough and stretchy. So when you're taking gluten out of food, if it's naturally gluten-free meals, that's fine. But when you're baking, you're going to need to replace it with something. So an ingredient like psyllium husk, once you add that in, it's going to give your bread dough, it's wonderful for gluten-free bread because it gives you the pliability you can actually knead and shape the dough.
So that little kind of bounce that bread's got,
Gluten-free dough needs a higher hydration level. So without something like psyllium husk, which is there to like slurp up and hold all that water, and give that stretch. It's very hard to work with the dough because it gets quite sloppy. But yeah, psyllium husk is just magic, and it's really good for your digestion as well.
Makes sense.
You can buy it quite easily online. I was, you know, added benefit of it. There's another one, xanthan gum, which you can find in the free from section of supermarkets now. That's wonderful if you're baking gluten-free cakes or making pastry. You only ever need it in very small quantities.
Okay.
Just add it in and it will transform a potentially dry and crumbly cake into like a fluffy, bouncy, wondrous sponge. And then there's naturally gluten-free flours like tapioca starch.
Yeah.
Have you ever had the Brazilian cheese bread? Those like beautifully golden, round, stretchy breads.
Oh, yes.
Bread.
Oh, so they use them.
So that's made with tapioca starch.
Amazing.
And they're so stretchy.
Yeah.
And that's a lovely one to add into breads again. And there's also an ingredient that I really love, which is going to sound like it won't be gluten-free, but it's called Codex wheat starch. It's not a very scientific name.
It does.
The Codex standard is... basically the approved level of gluten-free worldwide.
Which okay.
Is, something is gluten-free if it's less than 20 parts per million, hence Codex in the title. But so Codex wheat starch is wheat starch that's had the gluten removed from it. So industrially washed out of it, the gluten protein has been taken out of the wheat starch, leaving it gluten-free. And it's fully approved as gluten-free and tested to 4 parts per million, which is well below that 20 parts per million level.
Yeah.
Safely gluten-free, and it's just magic.
So what does that do to things?
I've used it a lot for gluten-free bread, and it just has wonderful properties and really creates extremely fluffy breads.
Yeah.
Make these bread rolls at home and using this gluten-free wheat starch, and it's just magic.
How did you find it?
I was in Italy. So a lot of travel really inspiring for when I'm coming up with
recipes. Because of the way different cultures use ingredients in their food.
Also, when you're traveling you're seeing all sorts of different foods and thinking, all these ideas come into your head. I speak Italian, so I was in a pizza restaurant in Italy, had a wonderful gluten-free pizza. And so I asked the chef and he showed me the flour they used. Yeah. And it was this particular Italian brand of flour, contains wheat starch. And so I started using it at home and my mind was blown. And it's one of those ingredients, because it's got wheat starch in the name, people get quite alarmed. But once you look into it and once you start using it, you realise it's a wonderful ingredient.
That.
And the feedback I get from people who have discovered this ingredient through me is just, you've changed my life. You know, it's really worth getting hold of. One of the main supermarkets stock it now.
And you can say which
can
one it is.
Online, so, yeah. Oh, it's a Melino Caputo.
Oh, right,
Fjordblad.
Okay,
it's
cool.
It's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah.
Ocado stock it now.
Yeah,
so
cool.
It's really nice to see ingredients like that becoming widely available as well, or more accessible.
Brilliant. That made me think, actually, about your process and your process of recipe developing. Like, how do you even start knowing what to take away and what to put it? Because we know, you know, I go down the flour aisle and I can see gluten-free bread flour. I can see gluten-free plain flour. But then how do you know when and where to add in all of those little things? Or is it just a process of elimination and testing and testing and testing?
I would say that's my job, really, is, and I love it.
Yeah.
And my brain, I have the half creative, half science brain. So recipe development is just like the perfect thing for me because I just have all these ideas about food and flavour and eating out in restaurants. You pick up ideas and having conversations with people and ideas come into your head. Anyway, melding those flavours together and then recreating how something should be in. So going for creating like a gluten-free version of what the gluten memory that I have.
Yeah.
As someone who develops gluten-free recipes, I then share the recipes having done all the work. So people baking from my recipes, for example, it should be really easy for them.
Yeah.
Because I've done all the science behind the scenes. But it is quite scientific when you're developing gluten-free recipes. One of the recipes that I was creating for the book was these gyoza. And
yeah, I saw that recipe.
I just had to completely go back to scratch and think about the properties of ingredients. So I ended up adding boiling water because I knew that that would gelatinize the starch in the flour that I was using. And that would then make it pliable so that I could roll them out and shape. And it's just things like that, having to get really technical sometimes. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm like geeking out right now. But it's, I just find it really fascinating and I love the challenge. So people will often message me and say, can you make X gluten-free. And I'm like, yeah, right, let's do this.
Oh, so that's it then, yeah.
I made panettone at Christmas and I was delighted.
Oh, really?
So good. And I'm a huge panettone fan, so.
And I was going to mention that because looking through the book,
yeah,
the level of detail is incredible. So you've got phyllo pastry, I mean,
that was a challenge. I was very proud of myself.
And you've got puff pastry, yes, and you've even got like how to make gluten-free sourdough. And you say, you know, it's going to take you a lot longer to get your little sourdough starter started because it hasn't got
I think it's so any sourdough starter always takes a couple of weeks because you want it to be strong. You can get it going after about 5 days, but to give it the strength and the oomph, then a couple of weeks of patience nurturing that starter. Yeah. Then once you've got it, it should, in theory, unless you let it die, just, you know, keep rolling on. You can keep it in the fridge to keep it fresh.
But I love it that you just haven't left it in a basic, the best gluten-free loaf ever. You've gone, no, I'm going to do sourdough, which is just, it's another level of, you know, even I don't make sourdough.
Well, I think it's, with the book, I really wanted to show that breadth.
Yeah.
And so that's something for everyone. So we're starting in the bread chapter, for example, with the 3-ingredient flatbread that there's no yeast. It's just yogurt and flour and baking powder.
Lovely.
You bring those together and it's lovely flatbread that we just make. If we run out of bread at home, we just make those quickly. And there's a wraps recipe as well. Again, 3 ingredients, super easy
to make. So you can start really simple and kind of work your way up.
And the sourdough's there for people who want to do sourdough. But if you don't, there's on the way to that, there are so many other wonderful breads we're moving through. Easy yeasted breads like focaccia, and then going to bagels and crusty
baguettes. And there's a babka in there, which is a bit more.
Chocolate babka, which is heaven. But actually not too complicated. You've got to do the braiding, but think bread is more intimidated people than it actually is.
Yeah.
And once you've dipped your toe into the pond of bread making, it's actually lovely to be able to bake these delicious breads at home. And as someone who, like, gluten-free bread is a challenging area. When you're buying it from the shops, it's never quite what you want. But I feel like freshly baked gluten-free bread at home can just be amazing.
Wow, I love that. Can you pick out a few recipes from the book that you particularly love? Which were the ones that you're kind of proud of, like your favourite children?
Okay, I might talk for a long time. I love all the recipes in the book. I there's 100 recipes in there and I'm just really proud of them. There's some wonderful easy dinner recipes. The first recipe in there is a teriyaki salmon sushi bowl, which I believe we're going to run as well.
That's beautiful looking
and
as well.
That was just one that I created during lockdown. I really missed being able to get takeaway sushi.
Yeah.
And couldn't really be bothered to roll sushi
at home.
So this was like a happy hybrid that came along. And it absolutely took off as well. It's probably still one of the most popular recipes on my website.
I was going to ask you that actually, because you're constantly putting recipes on your website, on your Instagram.
Yeah.
Do you use that as like a little taste check of what people, you know, if people love it, you think that's going in the book?
Yeah, so with the book, I've included, I think there's about 35 recipes from my website, and I chose the ones which I know are hugely popular with everybody because
it's great.
Lots of people will message me saying, they wish they had a printout copy of the book. So it made sense to ensure that those popular recipes are in there. So, but that's a lovely one. It's like glazed pieces of salmon on like a bed of sushi rice. You could use basmati with avocado and edamame beans. You can vary up the veg depending on what you've got. And like that's a really fantastic and quick midweek meal that we make a lot. Mm. There's pasta arenata is one of the recipes I've
loved. Yeah.
And that was like a personal one because I'd been to Lisbon, wonderful city, managed to have a gluten-free pasta arenata there, but you cannot get them for love nor money in the UK. If anyone knows where you can get one, you tell me.
Oh, you mean you had kitchen. A gluten-free one in Lisbon?
In Lisbon, yeah. So that was good. I feel like I've tasted an authentic one. So setting about creating that recipe, every time I bake them, I have to like limit myself and not eat the entire batch because they are delicious. That's probably one of the more advanced recipes. Yeah. There's a lovely recipe for fluffy waffles in there,
nice,
which we make all the time. My kids are obsessed with them and constantly, can you make us waffles? And it's a lovely, easy batter that you can just whip up.
Yeah.
You can also make it in the day before and keep it in the fridge. So we had it, I think, New Year's Day, just like made some waffles for kids and our friends and but there's loads of great recipes as well for sharing with friends and family.
Yeah.
I've really got something for every occasion. There's a slow roasted lamb dish in there, which
gorgeous.
I've done with wraps and a mint chimichurri and various salads. And we'd had it on New Year's Eve actually with friends, but I did the roast lamb and I made a baked cheesecake from the book and various mezze dishes, a cup, some of which are in the book. Sort of pulled it all together and like everyone, it went down a storm and it was really nice to be able to share this big gluten-free feast with my friends without them missing out on, feeling like they were missing out on anything.
And you've also got recipes for, I noticed, you know, if you don't, I know we can buy gluten-free noodles, pasta, gnocchi, but you've got recipes for them from scratch as well, which is lovely if you want to take it to that, because I haven't seen that before either. That really kind of level of detail again.
Oh, like I really wanted to give people the option, basically. Yeah. It's with the book, it's just giving people the tools and the skills to be able to make those things if they want. And if you don't want to make pasta from scratch, that's fine. You can still make the speedy pasta dishes. Yeah. Oh, I've got really good beef short rib ragu in there as well.
Short ribs.
And that with the homemade tagliatelle, it was just like, there were many happy food moments in my life when I was creating these recipes.
I don't think your friends and family are missing out on anything at all. I think they're very lucky.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So we all eat gluten free at home, even though I'm the only celiac. But it's also embracing, there's like a lovely prawn and chorizo jambalaya in the book as well. Yeah. And that's one which is like a naturally gluten-free recipe.
Yeah.
And dishes like that, I just really want people to be able to add just a few recipes to their repertoires so that they can just whap them out for dinner times during the week and everyone can enjoy them without anyone feeling
like they're missing out. It's a great shout. I think we'll wrap it up there. I was just going to ask you if if people are listening and they feel like they want to investigate further, you know, you were saying, are there any resources where they can go and check out, you know, gluten-free
There's
celiac?
A wonderful charity, which is Celiac UK.
Okay.
If you just Google Celiac UK, you'll go through to their website and there are pages upon pages there of information. The main ones that you should go and have a look at if you think you might be celiac is all about the signs and symptoms of celiac disease, because although there's these sort of classic well-known ones of upset tummy, stomach pains, vomiting, loss of weight, and there are actually much wider ranging symptoms and not everyone present those. Only like 36% of people who have celiac disease are diagnosed. There's loads of people out there who don't know they have it.
Oh God, that's crazy, isn't it?
And there can be things like mouth ulcers, recurrent miscarriage, more serious conditions like osteoporosis and bowel cancer can all be a result of untreated or mismanaged celiac disease.
Yeah.
So hence the importance of getting diagnosed and sticking to that gluten-free diet. So if you're in doubt, keep eating gluten, check out the symptoms and book in with your GP to get tested.
And get it tested. That's great. Well, thanks again for coming to chat to us, Laura. And I, like I said, I think the book's a brilliant place for people to get inspiration from. And if they want to find you online, it's mygfguide.com.
That's right.
That's your website. And at mygluten-freeguide on Instagram.
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thanks again for coming to chat to us.
Thanks so much for
brilliant.
Having me.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Thank you for listening to the Olive Podcast. For recipes and more information, head to olivemagazine.com. Do remember to listen out for our effortless bonus episodes where our guests reveal their best cooking cheats, hacks and shortcuts. And don't forget to subscribe at iTunes, Acast, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.